Welcome back to another Meet Kevin Report. It is episode number 83, and I have to say, there is nothing like a vacation to screw up your schedule even more. it was really fun. Really enjoyed vacationing with the kids, especially. I think that's really important, though. You know, you gotta spend time with family. I think that's what it's all about, after all. I found that when with my kids, at least, and family, I found it's a lot easier for me to spend really good, high quality time with my family when I'm away from my existing home and the home settings. So if you can go travel somewhere, I've personally found it so much easier to dedicate so many different parts of your day to actually being with your family, whereas when you're at home, it's so much easier to just go back to work and your workstation over and over again. But for example, when I was skiing just this last week, I had to reset up my studio every time I filmed. And so it was sort of like, build it, take it down, build it, take it down, over and over again. It was great because it wasn't there for me to keep going back to. Instead, it's like, I may as well just hang out with family, which is a really good thing. Whereas, you know, here, this studio is like always on. So I just walk in and I can go film at any moment. Like yesterday, I was in here at like 8:30 at night. Should I make a video right now? I'm like, come on, man. So, but anyway, I thought that was quite interesting. And it somewhat leads into one of the topics that we're going to talk about this morning. We got three pretty good topics to talk. We might bring it down to, we'll see. We may just do two today. So we've got a little bit of a time crunch. But we've got a couple good, at least a couple of good topics that we're going to cover. And I figure we may as well get started on those. So happy, thanks mods. happy weekend here. Hey, Kevin's son is a massive fan. Can you please give him a shout out for his birthday? Heck yeah, Aaron's son, happy birthday. Being a family man is great, right? It's wonderful. You know, I think it makes it exciting to be here. It's difficult to get back after, I mean, everybody knows after a vacation, it's difficult to fix your schedule. Oh, I wanted to run a poll. I have a question for you all. Okay, this is a good one. We do an afternoon Kevin report for politics. Yes, no. Around prime time, say 5 to 7 p.m. 4 to 7. Okay. All right, I'm going to run this poll, and I want to hear what your thoughts are. So the poll is, should we do an afternoon Meet Kevin report for politics? And that would be around prime time, so it'd be around like 4 to 7 p.m. And the idea here is, I realize sometimes when I cover politics in the morning Meet Kevin report, it seems like there's a higher incidence. The number's still low, but it seems like there's a higher incidence of some people who are like, man, I came here for finance, man. The bell's about to ring. Why are you talking about Trump or DeSantis or Newsom? I don't care. Right? So I thought, okay, all right. What if I separate? Now, I don't know that, I mean, I could be a lot more, I can definitely guarantee being live every day in the morning. I don't know if I could do that later in the day, depending on what happens with real estate and work and that. But I think pretty regularly, we could probably do like an afternoon Meet Kevin Report politics edition. So, and then it would just be about politics. And then that way, people who don't care about politics don't have to watch. And then folks who do can. I don't know. It was just a thought. So we'll throw that poll out there and we'll see what y'all have to say. All right. So, come on, man. You think anyone's going to say no to more Meet Kevin? Well, yeah. So far, the answer to that is yes. All right. So, anyway, that's our intro. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I think there are also always people who just sandbag polls because they're just like, no, Kevin, you already post enough content. Just stop. All right. So, yeah, that's our intro and poll. Now we're going to jump into a neat indicator of recession that has not activated yet. Oh, and you know what? I could actually, where is that bullish piece? I have a few pieces here on the recession, and I want to balance them. I wasn't planning on putting it in this, but now I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I should. Yeah, got it. Okay. All right, good. All right, here we go. All right. Well, folks, don't sue me, bro, but we know it's on everyone's mind, and yeah, I pressed the music button a little late, but you know what? We've all been worried about a recession. And in this video, we're gonna go through some unique recession indicators. There are two. There are two indicators in this video that you probably haven't heard of before. And then we're gonna look at a B of A piece on what just happened with something called thrust in the stock market. Something we briefly touched on already, but with a different perspective here from B of A. So let's talk about those three things. The first thing that I thought was incredible was this piece here by T.S. Lombard. Now keep in mind, when you hear T.S. Lombard, you should immediately be thinking bear, okay? They are bears. Their entire staff, I don't know what it is, but they're just bears. It's just like, it's gonna crash, it's gonna get worse, it's just all gonna go to crap. But for some reason, they're also very balanced, so I like them because they actually give some realistic POVs of things to watch for, so I appreciate that. You know, they make it very clear that their stance is, look, the credit crunch is going to probably crush us into a recession. Okay, fine. However, they're also reasonable here, and they say, hey, look, when you look at the U.S. inflation dashboard, basically on the left, when it's very red, it means inflation's going up, and on the right, when it turns blue, it means inflation is going down, and as you can see, it's starting to trend down, right? So they're realistic. They're like, okay, things are getting better. That's wonderful. Things are disinflating. Great. They still hold their mid-year recession forecast. But take a look at this particular chart. I thought this was a very interesting one that I haven't considered at all yet when it comes to a recession or not. And it's called the title here, chart 4, Hotel Room Rates Not Yet Signaling a Recession. And I thought about this a little bit, mostly because of Ross Gerber. Every time I meet Ross Gerber, and I just met Ross Gerber in Deer Valley, Utah, and Ross Gerber, I sit down with him as he's eating lunch with his family, and he's like, Kevin, there's no recession. Look around. And I'm like, it was pretty busy when we were there. But it made reading this chart right here made me think about my meeting with Ross, because to some extent, yeah, when you're in a recession, hotel rooms tank. And that the hope because people travel less for vacation and people travel less for business. This makes a lot of sense. So in a weird way, maybe you could look at the CPI report as a tool, which is actually doing a really good job for you. I mean, if you believe the government's work to that extent, if you don't, then obviously it's a CPI lie. But anyway, every month they are looking at a basket of hotels and they're looking at the difference in pricing of those hotels. And so far, as you can see on this chart, hotel pricing is still recovering pretty well. Now, it's possible that it's recovering because it went so deep into a hole. But then again, we've already had this recovery, fall, and then recovery again. See, we actually went negative on this chart without having a recession or an official recession yet. Technically, last year, we already had a recession, right? Let's jump over here to the CPI report because we had two quarters in a row of negative GDP. Jump into the CPI report. What do you have here? Lodging away from home. Let's understand the headlines of the CPI report really quick. So we're going to look at the right three to get our seasonally adjusted and then the left two to get our unadjusted. So if I type in lodging, there we go. So these are gonna be the seasonally adjusted right here. That's your SA, and these are your unadjusted. Okay, good. So what do you have? Well, unadjusted, you got some big numbers here for lodging away from home. Are these percentages, that's gotta be year over year. Hold on a second. Let's go back to the front of the CPI report. And these are year over year. Oh, okay, it's year over year, and then month over month, unadjusted. Okay, got it. I was gonna say. All right, so we jump on over here. Well, that's actually still, wow, what? No, that can't be possible. Hold on a sec. They both have to be year over year. Am I reading this wrong? No, I'm not. Look at that, unadjusted percent change. March 22 to March 23, And then Feb 23 to March 23, which is a one-month change. And the CPI report here on the unadjusted side is really suggesting lots of inflation over here on the unadjusted month over month. But either way, on the right, you can see on sort of the seasonally adjusted, yeah, you're still getting this explosion. I guess it makes sense. 2.7% growth in lodging away from home month over month. I mean, think about what that is annualized. 2.7% annualized is a 32.4% increase on a year-over-year basis if that lodging away from home goes on like this. And you can see, look, it's actually getting worse. If I draw this as an orange highlight right here, look at that. We go from 1.2 to 2.3 to 2.7. The prices for hotels are going up, not down. That's very interesting because according to T.S. Lombard, that's literally the opposite of a recession indicator, where generally when you go negative, deeply negative on hotel room pricing, that's when you tend to be starting a recession. Now, it's possible that you're already in a recession when hotel rooms go negative. In fact, if I look at this a little more closely, you can kind of see here the recession on the left in 2001 starts here, just about where hotels are about at that zero point. The recession here has an inflection point first on hotel rooms. So you do see an inflection point down, right? So you see an inflection before you get the recession. You don't actually get the depth until you're in the recession. But look at that, even over here during the COVID era, you see the fall a few months before. So really this is suggesting, hey, in order for us to go into a recession, we need to at least see hotel room occupancy on CPI report for April, May, June. We could get those 3 months. And if all of a sudden we get that in hotels, it could be a recession indicator. Kind of interesting. It's a good tool to pay attention to. It's not the only one though. The second one, and then we'll get into B of A. The second one I want to look at is this. Oops, it's not that one, but I'm going to talk about that one as well. That one's pretty cool. This one. All right. So this is from the Greed and Fear Index, which is a Jefferies piece. And they talk about how small businesses have slowed hiring plans to the lowest level since May of 2020. And when we look at this index over here, I drew red lines on it to make it a little easier to identify these areas of declines. But you can clearly see small business hiring goes down very slowly, and it tends to lead to a recession when it goes down. Now, in fairness, it really led to this sort of mild, nonsensical recession over here in the early 90s. But it does appear that every time you have the small business hiring plan turn from growth to bear mode, you do go into recession. And that's what we're starting to see over here on the right. We're just now starting to see this small business hiring plan rotate down. It's still way elevated though, because if I take the bottom of where we are with small business hiring plans, draw that across the board, we're still at, I would say, the upper third of the historical average of this chart, right? I mean, if I draw across sort of a midpoint over here, this top section here would be the top third. This would be your middle third, and this would be your bottom third here. And we're clearly still at the top third, but that's because of this massive enthusiasm that small businesses had during the COVID era, probably because of all the stimulus money. I mean, starting a business in 2020 and 2021 was great. Here's your small business survey on wage hike plans, and you see a decline on wage hikes. But again, if I draw from that low point all the way over, we're actually sitting probably at the top 15% of plans to raise wages. Small business optimism is one of the only things where we're actually starting to go low, along with small business CapEx plans, which you can see these two charts here are at relative lows. These are probably in the lower 20% threshold. So you kind of have mixed signals here from small businesses where everything is clearly declining, right? CapEx and optimism plans are down, wage hike plans are down, hiring plans are down. However, hiring plans are still at highs when you look at the early 2000s or the mid 2000s. So I think both of these indicators together suggest that we probably still have more time to go before we're in a recessionary environment. Now, Barclays did a phenomenal piece here on what happens with stocks in various different circumstances of basically recession or not. And I'm going to show you this in just a moment, but I want to think about what these charts are saying for a moment. So a quick signpost here. Really, what I think a lot of the data that we're getting today is saying is, first of all, don't sue me, bro. But second of all, is patience. That has probably been the hardest thing for me to like learn over the last years, because everything's always been so fast. And since the beginning of 2022, back in that January when I sold, and then, you know, obviously later I started rebuying, and then I launched an ETF and a real estate startup and stuff. Over all that time, the biggest thing I learned is like this, like these cycles take a lot longer than we think. And yesterday, there were actually some calls that we might not see a recession until 2024. And so what feels weird is it feels like we keep kicking the can down the road. I mean, yesterday in the course member live stream, we briefly went through some of the JPM numbers. And I'll tell you, those JPM numbers, without going through and rehashing all of it now, the JPM numbers were amazing. I mean, yeah, average deposits were starting to move down a little bit. A lot of that has to do with people moving money over into money markets. But credit card and debit card data is still up substantially. Lending is up. Revenue is up. I mean, JPM was absolutely destroying it. I still don't want to be involved with JPM. But when you look at credit losses, you're actually seeing credit losses decline. At industrials like Fastenal, you're seeing credit losses decline, like the rate of growth of credit losses. They're still increasing in some cases, but they're barely increasing. JPM barely increasing credit losses. I think one of the only places that I've actually seen increased credit losses has been CarMax. But then again, you're dealing with used car buyers who are more likely to be subprime, which is bad credit score, right? So overall, I have to say, like, you know, here we are in April, we could potentially have another year of no recession. I'm not saying there won't be a recession. It's just we keep kicking the damn thing down the road. The more we kick it down the road, the better, though. Because the more we kick it down the road, the more the cancer of inflation is potentially negative. And we just go back to cranking the money printer. I'm not saying that's exactly what we want, because we don't want to just repeat this over and over and over again and end up with three waves of inflation like the 70s, right? But I already debunked the three waves of inflation yesterday. You can type into YouTube, three waves of inflation, meet Kevin, you'll see what. But look at this. This is really fascinating. Equities on average continue to rise after the last Fed rate hike. Oh boy, that was interesting. Look at that. Here's the end of the hiking cycle, that middle line right there. You get some volatility going into it. But on average, it looks like most equities tend to rise slightly after the last Fed rate hike. However, on average, you tend to get a fall on average after the first cut. Now, obviously, I've made the argument many times before that the reason the Fed would cut is because the cancer of inflation is gone. They're not going to cut until that happens. And in my opinion, there's a chance the stock market could actually see through that because, again, once the cancer is gone, it's like, okay, yeah, we just have to go through a little bit of pain and then we're good again, right? Who knows? But that has happened before. Look, for example, at the stock market in the 1980 recession, which is interesting because that came right before the Paul Volcker, but they were raising rates to fight inflation without having to go Paul Volcker level yet. And look at what happened. It's this light blue line right here above that red line I just drew. Equities did very well. In fact, from the cut to the end of the 1980 cycle, stocks went up like 25%. However, when we got Paul Volcker'd, stocks actually went down about 15%. And then the average is the red line here. Now the average is actually phenomenal. The average suggests flat. So that's weird because everybody's like, oh my God, the first rate cut's gonna crash the market. Well, not really. The average is the red line right there and it shows flat after the first rate cut, but after the pause, you actually get about a 7-8% rally in stocks. Kind of interesting. This is really interesting data. All of this data isn't very bearish. Combine it with PPI, retail sales, CPI, PCE from last month, a lot of the data that we're getting just is not that terrible. Now, this was the breadth indicator that we had talked about, and Bank of America is basically also reiterating how this is a bullish signal. Basically, this was the Bloomberg chart that I shared yesterday, essentially suggesting that, oh, this is bullish. Like, usually when this indicator flips, it's very bullish for markets. And that thrust indicator flipped. We talked about it yesterday. Bank of America did a whole piece reiterating how bullish it is. Now, I didn't want to get blindly bullish here. I feel like I'm already bullish enough. But I think the argument here is we might still have time. We might still have a good chunk of patience ahead of us before we actually hit a recession. It might not be as soon as June or July. It could be a Christmas recession or a Q1 of 24 recession. And by that point, it could be so mild because inflation could be so low. I mean, who knows? But it'll be very interesting to pay attention to. And I think now we've got a couple good leading indicators, not only the small business leading indicators, but personally, if you want an easy one, look for that inflection in hotel rooms, because we have not seen that inflection in hotel rooms yet. So I know it feels nuanced, but it very much hits people's sentiment when they, it's evidence of people's sentiment changing when they stop traveling, right? And I think that's really, you know, throws back to the Ross Gerber argument, which is, there's no recession, you know, looking around at basically what people are actually physically doing. So we like to refer to that as our Ross Gerber research, where you physically go somewhere. Like yesterday, I went to Red Robin, and I'm like, oh my God, there are a lot of people here. And I thought this was a charity, because they lose money. Anyway, so that's some of my thoughts on the recession here. Please make sure to check out the programs on Building Your Wealth link down below. Get lifetime access to the courses on Building Your Wealth. You can buy now, pay later to join. Probably about 40% of people who are signing up right now are using BNPL, which is pretty awesome. It gets people in who've been waiting to get in, and hopefully we can build your wealth to make it so you never have to use BNPL again. Let's get you out of there. So a pretty good trade the other day too. Hope to do some more of those. So you get buy sell alerts as well in the Stocks and Site group. And folks, let's get to the next segment. All right, next. So the next segment that I want to talk about is, oh yeah, we got to talk Elon. Oh, you knucklehead. Yeah, knucklehead. Okay, here's a guy called Flazek. He says, stop shilling that every 5 seconds, bro. You know, it's been 22 minutes and I've mentioned it once. So technically, according to math, I only shilled once in 22 minutes, which means 22 minutes, 22 times 60 is 1,320 seconds, divided by 5 means you think I shilled 264 times. I shilled once. That means you're wrong by a factor of 264, or a magnitude of 26 times. That's pretty embarrassing. All right. Okie dokie. Next topic. Take another sip here. Well, Elon Musk is back at it again. You've got a lot to uncover in this one in terms of what stocks could be benefiting from what Elon Musk is up to, how you might be able to actually invest with Elon Musk, and what the hell is Elon doing again? Because on one side, you've got especially the Democrat side, and remember, my goal is to be neutral here, provide both sides. On one side, you got the Democrats going, hey man, you signed and helped lead a letter saying, no, 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 we need to pause AI development for 6 months. Keep in mind, when I heard about that letter, I made a video and I tweeted that that is just literally stupid, because all it's going to do is create a prisoner's dilemma, and the people who choose not to pause will end up winning. The people who pause lose. It's very simple. That's humanity. Well, it turns out that Elon Musk, around the same time as he was signing the letter, created a company called X.AI. And he is apparently trying to start an AI startup specifically focused on AI that is separate from the AI you have over at Tesla. And so Democrats are like, there he is being a hypocrite again. And Republicans, or people who lean more right, or maybe you're more in favor of Elon Musk, you're like, dude, no, like, this is a hedge. Like, he could sign the letter, and then if everybody agrees, he could also agree. But if he doesn't agree, or like if everybody else doesn't agree, then at least he's hedged and can actually get into the race. And, you know, I mean, that one sounds pretty logical, but I guess it depends. Do you like Elon? You believe the logical one. You don't like Elon? You say the other one. You know, just like, for example, there was another little hit piece from MSNBC, you basically had one of the anchors suggesting, hey, you know, Elon Musk could basically control political outcomes by turning the dial on what kind of media coverage we get. You know, we could get less Democrat coverage. And Elon Musk, I thought it was brilliant, replied to it. And this is not me trying to shill Elon. It was just a fair reply. He replied to that tweet and said, you know, that's exactly what the prior administration did to Republicans. Now, he's right about that. Now, do we know that with certainty those kind of shenanigans won't happen in the future? No, of course not. There's no way to know that with certainty. If you like Elon, you think it's all going to be free, transparent, and clear, and free of that sort of dial tuning. And if you're a Democrat, you think it's definitely not. I mean, that's just the way it is. You like Elon or you don't, right? But what is this new company that now he's talking about? What is this X.AI? What could this possibly be? Well, what it is Elon's potential AI division as part of his Everything app. Remember that Elon Musk actually just changed the name of Twitter. The corporation is now going to be called X Corp. That is what Twitter is now called, X Corp. And the parent company is called X Holdings. And as part of X Holdings, now Elon Musk has filed for X.AI. And it appears, based on interviews that the Financial Times has conducted, that Elon Musk is looking to raise money to sell up to about 100,000 shares, I believe it was, or was 100, it doesn't really matter. Somewhere around a certain number of shares they want to sell to investors to help Elon fund his AI startup. Now, they are privately going to larger whales like SpaceX and Tesla investors. And Elon Musk is starting this company separately from Tesla, which is leaving a lot of Tesla bulls wanting to rip their hair out, suggesting, what the hell? You said Tesla was the AI company. Now you're creating a separate AI company. When is Tesla going to get its CEO back? Tesla now has to deal with Elon playing with Twitter and dealing with XAI. What's going on? And I've been getting a lot of messages on this. And while I think the concerns are valid, I don't think that Elon starting a separate AI company is actually net negative to Tesla. Yes, Elon's going to be more distracted, but let me put it this way. I honestly think that in some extent, and I'm not trying to compare myself to Elon, but I think to some extent Elon is very much going to be distracted and interested in new things all the time anyway, whether it's XAI or something else. It's going to be something. I find I do that as well. Like, I'm really gung-ho. I could get a lot done for my YouTube channel, for my real estate startup, and then I want to go do something else. And then I go back. And that keeps me excited about regularly working on the different projects. So I personally do not think the lack of Elon necessarily being in the factory every day is a net negative to Tesla. I don't believe that. In some cases, I think insiders might actually say it's a net positive. Like, let the company operate, damn it. You know, get the boss away from over our shoulders. Now, there are some arguments that people are making that, but wait a minute, AI was supposed to be part of Tesla. No, full self-driving was supposed to be part of Tesla. The Dojo supercomputer is part of Tesla. And the Dojo supercomputer is still part of Tesla. Now, some people say, but Dojo was supposed to be the AI basis for all these other AI projects that could happen. True. And it still can be. In fact, it is entirely possible, because Tesla created the Dojo supercomputer, it could potentially lease its superpower technology or sell, you know, some of its assets. I would hope some kind of lease, so that way there's some kind of residual revenue for Tesla. There is a way to basically monetize the research and R&D that has been done at Tesla for the benefit of xAI, which then also benefits Tesla, without distracting Tesla engineers from what we should really be focused on, which is full self-driving. So let Tesla be what it is. What's going to be the best and biggest car company in the world, with the best margins in the world, the best factories in the world, the robotics, the Optimus robot, and the Dojo supercomputer. Let that operate the way it is, and let Elon play his artificial intelligence game. Now, if you think back to 1 year ago, maybe about May, one of the things that I regularly talked about is Elon's purchasing of Twitter actually and potentially allows him to create a verbal neural net, like a language-based neural net. It's going to be a little pisser and a jerk and really cynical, because if you base any neural net off Twitter, it's going to be an asshole. but one of the things we talked about is, oh, this is interesting. If he buys Twitter, he could maybe create some kind of verbal artificial intelligence, which you could then use in the Optimus. So you could actually go both ways, right? You could say, yeah, maybe the AI company starts leasing compute power from Dojo and some of the research from Dojo, but then vice versa, that could go back into Optimus. So I don't really see this as such a negative thing here. I'll tell you what I think is the biggest beneficiary, and then investing with Elon Musk, how that works. So the biggest beneficiary, in my opinion, is actually NVIDIA. Yeah, that's also one of the big holdings that I personally am exposed to. There are a lot of ETFs that have NVIDIA in it. I'm a big fan of it. I think it has a lot of pricing power. Twitter apparently has been buying 10,000 plus NVIDIA GPUs. Not only that, but Elon Musk says, said in an interview, it seems like Twitter Spaces, quote, it seems like everyone and their dog is buying GPUs at this point. Twitter and Tesla are certainly buying GPUs. And it would be assumed that after this xAI gets started, that there will be a lot of chip buying as well. So I'm a massive fan of not trying to be part of this crazy AI gold rush. I'm a big fan of selling the pickaxes. Look, y'all go kill each other with your AI, whatever, man. I just want to sell you chips. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go down the stack. I'm going to go where the stimulus money is. Because guess where there's no stimulus money? In AI. But guess where there is stimulus money? Chips and energy. What do you need for AI? Chips and energy. NVIDIA, AMD, ASML to manufacture the machines that make the chips, the fabs, your Intel, super undervalued with the potential that Intel might be able to pull off with its fabs that it's creating thanks to stimulus dollars, TSMC, AMD. And yeah, look, I'm talking my book here, but it's because I believe it. Like, I'm not going to go try to speculate on random AI startups. The barriers to entry are like zero. Dude, anybody can download the API for ChatGPT and boom, you get started with your AI startup. So, anyway, look, my belief is this is not a net negative for Tesla. Relax. Now, when it comes to investing with Elon Musk, the odds are you're not going to. I'm just being blunt about that. If that upsets you, you can get life insurance in as little as 5 minutes. We got a paid promotion up here. You can even get short form to read about business books so you could learn about how the rich people do it. Short form has superpowered book summaries. They're a sponsor here on the channel. Just go to shortform.com/meetkevin and I negotiated a higher discount at 25%, which is pretty awesome. So check that out, link down below. Okay, so for investing with Elon Musk, you really basically, you have to, A, have a lot of money. So you have to be an accredited investor. In some cases, you have to be a qualified investor. And you have to be part of the network. So you probably would have already had to been an early Tesla investor, an early SpaceX investor or know somebody who is an asset manager that has billions of dollars under management, for example, like a Ross, who has connections with the investing fund round leaders inside Tesla. And the reason they do that is because when you have a private holding and people come to you, you don't have to go through the crap with the SEC, which in fairness is fair game. If you want to solicit to everyone, it's fair that you have to go through the SEC. I'm not trying to bag on the SEC here. So far, I like the SEC. Knock on wood. But anyway, like when I did my house hack Reg D for accredited investors, for me to do that here on YouTube, I had to put a filing together and get that filed with the SEC. For us to do a Reg A, we have to put a filing together and go through the SEC, which we're in the midst of. Everything takes longer than you expect. But that's if you want to advertise to everyone. There's no way in hell Elon, I think, is going to go through that because he can get enough money from his private circles. So there's no ticker symbol. There's nothing to invest in. It's just here are the ideas that Elon Musk is up to. And if you're interested, then pay attention and subscribe to the channel. So that gives me, or gives you rather, my opinion on what's going on with Elon, what's going on with this new XEI company. It's very interesting, you know, AI platform next to, you know, some kind of competitor to ChatGPT. You know, he used to be a co-founder at OpenAI, left due to disagreements over AI safety. Pretty wild. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see how things develop. But I'm a big fan of, we have a lot of, did I press the wrong button? I may have pressed the wrong button. Let me press it again. There we go. I'm a big fan of believing that the sum of all the parts, all these AI projects, is greater than the individual pieces alone. In other words, this is not a zero-sum game. This isn't if Elon spends some time on an AI project, Tesla's gonna lose. Don't think that way. There's so much opportunity in this world. You gotta have an abundance mindset and go optimistic on this, all right? Don't sue me, bro. All right. So I'll hang out for a moment and do a little bit of Q&A. I do actually have to go, though. But let's do a little bit of Q&A. Should people try to be YouTubers? I think that everybody should try to throw their hat in the ring, but I'm just going to be honest. I think I got lucky. I think it's a lottery. So it's hard. Because I think it's very luck-based, you know, and I think that's going to be very discouraging, unfortunately, to a lot of people. I'm not saying don't play the lottery, don't try, right? But yeah, it's not the most guaranteed, you know, and it comes with its own problems, as with everything, you know. I try really hard, there are a lot of, and I'm fortunate that people enjoy my content. Oh, we have to look at the poll result. What was the poll result? 65% said do it out of, just a little over 1,000 votes. That's pretty cool. Thank y'all. All right. Well, I'll look into that. So, excuse me. But yeah, I mean, it's, a lot of people do a lot of hard work, but the thing is, the harder you work on YouTube does not necessarily correlate with, you know, how well you're gonna do. And I think that's the part that's very frustrating to people, because there are a lot of people who work very, very hard, and it just doesn't go anywhere. All right, let's do another couple questions here, and then I gotta go. Thank you for the bless you. I'd only do 4 to 7. It doesn't take away from the current live streams. Yeah, I agree with you. That's a good point. Thank you, Brandon. That's a really good point. Why you have a course? Well, because there are a lot of people who really want the best chance, right? And what you learn in the YouTube course has a lot to do with communication and working with people and prep work as well. So you learn skills that are very lifelong skills. But yeah, I mean, look, people who want to have the best shot at creating a YouTube channel are interested in learning everything they can. And so, of course, we have a product for that. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be dishonest about, you know, the odds. Yeah, I agree with you, Max, on the R&D team there. Luck favors the brave. Oh, man. Tesla phones clickbait. Sweater looks comfy. It is. This is an aloe sweater. It's like some yoga company I saw in New York. I don't even do yoga. I can't do that. I can touch my toes, but I ain't doing yoga. I did it once with, I went to yoga with my aunt in Germany, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing this again. If I, what's that dog called? The reverse, I don't know. I don't know. What coffee do you like? Black? I like everything black. Every time I go to Starbucks, I just ask for a big black. Someone here says, this is kind of ironic. The American one with a political hat in their icon says, Kevin, no politics, sports, or religion. You'll lose subscribers. This is old wisdom. I mean, that may be true, but I really think that I can talk to anybody about politics. I think, yeah, there's always the risk of losing the far extremes on the far left or right, but I think I'm pretty reasonable and I'm open to everybody's perspective. Like, I don't care who you are. I'd go to, a coffee meeting or a dinner with anybody, whether that's Nancy Pelosi or Kevin McCarthy or Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell. I think it'd be very interesting. And quite frankly, I think if you talk to some of these people, as much as you might hate some of those people, you might see they're just a regular human trying to do their best. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too optimistic about people, but that's what I think. All right. I gotta go. Really appreciate y'all. We'll see you in the next one. All right. Bye.